Hegel, the Science of Logic, Section 2, Objectivity. In the book 1 of the Objective Logic, abstract being was presented as passing over into existence, but at the same time as retreating into essence. In book 2, essence shows itself as determining itself as ground, thereby stepping into concrete existence and realizing itself as substance, but at the same time retreating into the concept. Of the concept, we have now first shown that it determines itself as objectivity. It should be obvious that this latter transition is essentially the same as the proof from the concept, that is to say, from the concept of God to his existence, that was formerly found in metaphysics, or the so-called ontological proof. Equally well known is that Descartes' sublimest thought that God is that whose concept includes its being within itself, after having degenerated into the bad form of the formal syllogism, namely into the form of the sad proof, finally succumbed to the critique of reason and to the thought that existence cannot be extracted from the concept. Some elucidations concerning this proof have already been made earlier, in volume 1, page 47, where being has vanished into its closest opposite, non-being, and becoming has shown itself to be the truth of both. Attention was called to the confusion that arises in the case of a determinate existence when we concentrate not on its being but on its determinate content, and then imagine if we compare this determinate content, for example $100, with another determinate content, example the context of my perception of my financial situation, and discover that it makes indeed a difference whether the one content is added to the other or not, that we are dealing with the distinction of being and non-being, or even the distinction of being and the concept. Further, in the same volume, on the page 64 and on page 289 of volume 2, the definition of a sum total of all reality which occurs in the ontological proof was elucidated. But the essential subject matter of that proof, the connectedness of concept and existence, is the concern of the treatment of the concept just concluded and of the entire course that the latter traverses in determining itself to objectivity. The concept as absolutely self-identical negativity is self-determining. It was noted that the concept, in resolving itself into judgment in singularity, already posits itself as something real and existent. This still abstract reality completes itself in objectivity. Now it might appear that the transition from the concept into objectivity is quite another thing than the transition from the concept of God to God's existence. But on the one hand, it must be borne in mind that the determinate content, God, makes no difference in the logical progression, and that the ontological proof is only one application of this logical progression to that particular content. On the other hand, it is essential to be reminded of the remark made above that the subject obtains determinateness and content only in its predicate, that prior to the predicate, whatever that content might otherwise be for feeling, intuition, and representation, so far as conceptual cognition is concerned, it is only a name. But in the predicate with determinateness, there begins at the same time the process of realization in general. The predicates, however, must be grasped as themselves still confined within the concept, hence as something subjective with which no move to existence has yet been made. Even for this reason, in judgment, the realization of the concept is certainly not completed yet. But there is the further reason that the mere determination of the subject matter through predicates, without this determination being at the same time the realization and objectification of the concept, remains something so subjective that it is not even a true cognition and determination of the concept of the subject matter. Subjective in the sense of abstract reflection and non-conceptual representation. God as living God, and better still as absolute spirit, is only recognized in what he does. Humankind were directed early to recognize God in his works. Only from these can the determinations proceed that can be called his properties, and in which his being is also contained. It is thus the conceptual comprehension of God's activity, that is to say of God himself, that recognizes the concept of God in his being and his being in his concept. Being by itself, or even existence, are such a poor and restricted determination that the difficulty of finding them in the concept may well be due to not having considered what being or existence themselves are. Being as entirely abstract, immediate self-reference is nothing but the abstract moment of the concept. It is its moment of abstract universality that also provides what is required of being, namely that it be outside the concept, for inasmuch as universality is a moment of the concept, it is also its difference or the abstract judgment wherein the concept opposes itself to itself. The concept, even as formal, already immediately contains being in a truer and richer form, in that as self-referring negativity, it is singularity. But of course, the difficulty of finding being in the concept in general, and equally so in the concept of God, becomes insuperable if we expect being to be something that we find in the context of external experience, or in the form of sense perception, like the $100 in the context of my finances, as something graspable only by hand, not by spirit, essentially visible to the external and not the internal eye. In other words, if the name of being, reality, truth, is given to that which things possess as sensuous, temporal, and perishable. The consequence of a philosophizing that in regard to being fails to rise above the senses is that in regard to the concept it also fails to let go of merely abstract thought. Such thought stands opposed to being. The customary practice of regarding the concept as something just as one-sided as abstract thought will already stand in the way of accepting what has just been suggested, namely that we regard the transition of the concept of God to his being as an application of the logical course of objectification of the concept presented above. Yet, if it is granted, as it commonly is, that the logical element as the formal element constitutes the form for the cognition of every determinate content, then that application at least would have to be conceded, unless even at the opposition of concept and objectivity in general, one stops short at the untrue concept and an equally untrue reality as an ultimate. But in the exposition of the pure concept, it was further indicated that the latter is the absolute divine concept itself. In truth, therefore, what takes place is not a relation of application, but the immediate display in the logical course of God's self-determination as being. But on this point, it is to be remarked that inasmuch as the concept is to be presented as the concept of God, it ought to be apprehended as it is when already taken up in the idea. The said pure concept passes through the finite forms of the judgment and the syllogism precisely because it is not yet posited in and for itself as one with objectivity, but is conceived rather only in the process of becoming that objectivity. The latter, too, is not yet the divine concrete existence, not yet the reality reflectively shining in the idea. And yet objectivity is just that much richer and higher than the being or existence of the ontological proof, as the pure concept is richer and higher than that metaphysical vacuum of the sum total of all reality. But I reserve for another occasion the task of elucidating in greater detail the manifold misunderstanding brought upon the ontological proof of God's existence, and also on the rest of the other so-called proofs by logical formalism. We shall also elucidate Kant's critique of such proofs in order to establish their true meaning, and thus restore the thoughts on which they are based to their worth and dignity. We have previously called attention to the several forms of immediacy that have already come on the scene, but in different determinations. In the sphere of being, immediacy is being itself and existence. In the sphere of essence, it is concrete existence and then actuality and substantiality. In the sphere of the concept, besides being immediacy as abstract universality, it is now objectivity. These expressions, when the exactitude of philosophical conceptual distinctions is not at stake, may be used as synonymous, but the determinations are derived from the necessity of the concept. Being is, as such, the first immediacy, and existence is the same immediacy with a first determinateness. Concrete existence, along with the thing, is the immediacy that proceeds from ground, from the self-sublating mediation of the simple reflection of essence. But actuality and substantiality are the immediacy that proceeds from the sublated difference of the still unessential concrete existence as appearance and its essentiality. Finally, objectivity is the immediacy as which the concept has determined itself by the sublation of its abstraction and mediation. It is the privilege of philosophy to choose such expressions from the language of ordinary life, which is made for the world of imaginary representations as seen to approximate the determinations of the concept. There is no question of demonstrating for a word chosen from ordinary life, that in ordinary life too the same concept is associated with that for which philosophy uses it. For ordinary life has no concepts, only representations of the imagination, and to recognize the concept in what is otherwise mere representation is philosophy itself. It must therefore suffice if representation for those of its expressions that philosophy uses for its definitions has only some rough approximation of their distinctive difference. It may also be the case that in these expressions one recognizes pictorial adumbrations, which, as approximations, are close indeed to the corresponding concepts. One will be hard-pressed, perhaps, to concede that something can be without actually existing, but at least nobody will mistake, for instance, being as the copula of the judgment for the expression to exist actually. And nobody will say that this article exists, dear, suitable, etc. Gold exists, a metal or metallic, instead of this article is dear, suitable, etc. Gold is a metal. And surely it is common to distinguish being from appearing, appearance from actuality, as also being as contrasted to actuality. And still more, all these expressions from objectivity. But even if such expressions were used synonymously, philosophy would in any case have the freedom to take advantage of such empty superfluity of language for the purpose of its distinctions. Mention was made in connection with the apodictic judgment, where judgment attains completion and the subject thus loses its determinateness as against the predicate. Of the double meaning of subjectivity originating from it, namely the subjectivity of the concept and equally so of the externality and contingency confronting the concept. A similar objectivity also appears for the double meaning of standing opposed to the self-subsistent concept yet of also existing in and for itself. In the former sense, the object stands opposed to the I equals I, which in subjective idealism is declared to be the absolute true. It is then the manifold world in its immediate existence with which the I, or the concept, is engaged in endless struggle in order, by the negation of the inherently nullity of this other, to give to its first certainty of being a self the actual truth of its equality with itself. In a broader sense, it means a subject matter in general for whatever interest or activity of the subject. In the opposite sense, however, the objective signifies that which exists in and for itself without restriction and opposition. Rational principles, perfect works of art, etc. are said to be objective to the extent that they are free and above every accidentality. Although rational principles, whether theoretical or ethical, only belong to the sphere of the subjective, to consciousness, this aspect of the latter of existing in and for itself is nonetheless called objective. The cognition of truth is made to rest on the cognition of the object as free of any addition by subjective reflection, and right conduct on the adherence to objective laws, such as are not of subjective origin and are immune to arbitrariness and to treatment that would compromise their necessity. At the present standpoint of our treatise, objectivity has the meaning, first of all, of the being in and for itself of the concept that has sublated the mediation posited in its self-determination, raising it to immediate self-reference. This immediacy is therefore itself immediately and entirely pervaded by the concept, just as its totality is immediately identical with its being. But further, since the concept equally has to restore the free being for itself of its subjectivity, it enters with respect to objectivity into a relation of purpose in which the immediacy of the objectivity becomes a negative for it, something to be determined through its activity. This immediacy thus acquires the other significance, namely that in and for itself, insofar as it stands opposed to the concept, it is a nullity. First, then, objectivity is in its immediacy. Its moments, on account of the totality of all moments, stand in self-subsistent indifference as objects each outside the other, and as so related they possess the subjective unity of the concepts only as inner or as outer. This is mechanism. But second, inasmuch as in mechanism that unity reveals itself to be the immanent law of the object, their relation becomes one of non-indifference, each specifically different according to law, a connection in which the object's determinate self-subsistence is sublated. This is chemism. Third, this essential unity of the objects is thereby posited as distinct from their self-subsistence. It is the subjective concept, but posited as referring in and for itself to the objectivity as purpose. This is teleology. Since purpose is the concept posited as within it referring to objectivity, and through itself sublating its defect of being subjective, the at first external purposiveness becomes, through the realization of the purpose, internal. It becomes idea. Chapter 1. Mechanism. Since objectivity is the totality of the concept that has returned into its unity, an immediate is thereby posited which is in and for itself that totality, and is also posited as such, but in it the negativity of the concept has as yet not detached itself from the immediacy of the totality. In other words, the objectivity is not yet posited as judgment. Insofar as it has the concept immanent in it, the difference of the concept is present in it, but on account of the objective totality. The differentiated moments are complete and self-subsistent objects that, consequently, even in connection, relate to one another as each standing on its own, each maintaining itself in every combination as external. This is what constitutes the character of mechanism, namely that whatever the connection that obtains between the things combined, the connection remains one that is alien to them, that does not affect their nature, and even when a reflective semblance of unity is associated with it, the connection remains nothing more than composition, mixture, aggregate, etc., spiritual mechanism, like its material counterpart, also consists in the things connected in the spirit remaining external to one another and to spirit. A mechanical mode of representation, a mechanical memory, a habit, a mechanical mode of acting mean that the pervasive presence that is proper to spirit is lacking in what spirit grasps or does. Although its theoretical or practical mechanism cannot take place without its spontaneous activity, without an impulse and consciousness, the freedom of individuality is still lacking in it. And since this freedom does not appear in it, the mechanical act appears as a merely external one. A. The mechanical object. The object is, as we have seen, the syllogism whose mediation has attained equilibrium and has therefore come to be immediate identity. It is therefore in and for itself a universal. Universality, not in the sense of a commonality of properties, but a universality that pervades particularity and in it is immediate singularity. 1. To begin with, therefore, the object does not differentiate itself into matter and form, matter being its presumed self-subsistent universal aspect and form, the particular and singular instead. According to his concept, any such abstract differentiation of singularity and universality has no place in the object. If regarded as matter, the object must then be taken to be in itself informed matter. One can just as well take it as a thing with properties, as a whole consisting of parts, as substance with accidents, or as determined by the other relations of reflection. But these are all past relations that in the concept have come to an end. The object, therefore, has neither properties nor accidents, for these are separable from the thing or the substance, whereas in the object particularity is absolutely reflected into the totality. In the parts of a whole, there is indeed present that self-subsistence that pertains to the differences of the object, but these differences are at once themselves essentially objects, totalities which, unlike parts, are not such as against the whole. At first, therefore, the object is indeterminate, for it has no determinate opposition within, because it is the mediation that has collapsed into immediate identity. Inasmuch as the concept is essentially determined, the object has in it the determinateness of a manifold which, although complete, is otherwise indeterminate, that is, relationless. One that constitutes a totality also not further determined at first, sides or parts that may be distinguished within it belong to an external reflection. This totally indeterminate difference thus amounts just to this, that there are several objects, each of which only contains its determinateness reflected into its universality and does not reflectively shine outwardly. Because this indeterminate determinateness is essential to the object is in itself a plurality and must therefore be regarded as a composite, an aggregate. Yet it does not consist of atoms, for atoms are not objects because they are not totalities. Leibniz's monad would be more of an object. It is a total representation of the world which, shut up within its intensive subjectivity, in essence at least is supposed to be a one. Yet the monad, determined as an exclusive one, is a principle only assumed by reflection. It is an object, however, both because the ground of its manifold representations of the developed, that is, the posited determinations of its merely implicit totality, lies outside it, and because it is equally a matter of indifference for the monad that it constitutes an object together with other objects. In fact, therefore, it is not exclusive, not self-determined for itself. 2. Since the object is now a totality of determinateness, yet because of its determinateness and immediacy, it is not the totality's negative unity. It is indifferent towards the determinations as singulars determined in and for themselves, just as these are themselves indifferent to each other. These, therefore, are not comprehensible from it nor from one another. The object's totality is the form of the overall reflectedness of its manifoldness into a singularity in general, which is not in itself determinate. The determinacies, therefore, which are in it do indeed pertain to it, but the form that constitutes their difference and combines them into a unity is an external one, indifferent to them, whether it be a mixture or again an order, a certain arrangement of parts and sides. These are combinations that are indifferent to what they connect. Consequently, like an existence in general, the object has the determinateness of its totality outside it in other objects, and these again outside them, and so forth to infinity. The imminent turning back of this progression in infinitum must indeed be likewise assumed, and it must be represented as a totality, as a world, but one which is nothing but a universality brought to closure through a singularity that remains indeterminate, a universe. Since the object is thus determinate yet indifferent to its determinateness, through itself it points for its determinateness outside and beyond itself, constantly to objects for which it is, however, likewise a matter of indifference that they do the determining. Consequently, nowhere is a principle of self-determination to be found. Determinism, which is the standpoint that cognition adopts when it assumes as truth the object as we first have it here, assigns for each determination of the object that of another object. But this other object is likewise indifferent both to its determinateness and its determining. For this reason, determinism is itself so indeterminate as to be bound to an infinite progression. It can halt at will anywhere and be satisfied there, because the object to which it has progressed, being a formal totality, is shut up within itself and indifferent to its being determined by another. For this reason, to explain the determination of an object, and to this end to extend the representation of it beyond it, is only an empty word, for there is no self-determination in the other object to which the explanation has been extended. 3. Now, since the determinateness of an object lies in an other, there is no determinate diversity separating the two. The determinateness is merely doubled, once in the one object and then again in the other. It is something utterly identical, and the explanation or comprehension is, therefore, a tautology. This tautology is an external back and forth movement, since the determinateness fails to obtain from objects that are indifferent to it any proper differentiation and is therefore only identical. There is only one determinateness at hand, and that it should be doubled only expresses precisely the externality and vacuity of a difference. But the objects are at the same time self-subsistent in regard to one another. In that identity, therefore, they remain utterly external. Thus there arises the contradiction of a perfect indifference of objects to one another and of an identity of determinateness of such objects, or of the object's perfect externality in the identity of their determinateness. This contradiction is consequently the negative unity of a plurality of objects reciprocally repelling each other in the unity. This is the mechanical process. B. The mechanical process. If objects are regarded only as self-enclosed totalities, they cannot act on one another. Regarded in this way, they are the same as the monads, which, precisely for that reason, were thought of as having no influence on each other. But the concept of a monad is just for this reason a deficient reflection. For in the first place, the monad is a determinate representation of its only implicit totality, as a certain degree of development and positiveness of its representation of the world, it is determinate. But since it is a self-enclosed totality, it is also indifferent to this determinateness and is therefore not its own determinateness, but a determinateness posited through another object. In second place, it isn't immediate in general, for it is supposed to be just a mirroring. Its self-reference is therefore abstract universality and hence an existence open to others. It does not suffice, in order to gain the freedom of substance, to represent the latter as a totality that, complete in itself, would have nothing to receive from the outside. On the contrary, a self-reference that grasps nothing conceptually but is only a mirroring is precisely a passivity towards the other. Likewise, the determinateness, whether we now take it as the determinateness of a being that exists or that mirrors, as a degree of the monad's own internally generated development, is something external. The degree that the development achieves has its limits in another. To project the reciprocal influence of substances into a predetermined harmony means nothing more than to make it a presupposition, in effect to remove it from the scope of the concept. The need to avoid the interaction of substances was founded on the moment of absolute self-subsistence and originariness, which was made a fundamental assumption. But since the positiveness, the degree of development, does not correspond to this assumed in itselfness, it has for this reason its ground in an other. In connection with the relation of substantiality, we showed that it passes over into the relation of causality. But now the existent no longer has the determination of a substance, but that of an object. The causal relation has come to an end in the concept. The originariness of one substance vis-à-vis another has shown itself to be a reflective shine, the substance's action a transition into the opposite substance. This relation has therefore no objectivity. Hence, insofar as one object is posited in the form of subjective unity as efficient cause, this no longer counts as an originary determination but as something mediated. The active object has this determination only by means of another object. Mechanism, since it belongs to the sphere of the concept, has that posited within it, which proved to be the truth of the relation of causality, namely, that the cause which is supposed to be something existing in and for itself is in fact effect just as well, positiveness. In mechanism, therefore, the originary causality of the object is immediately a non-originariness. The object is indifferent to this determination attributed to it, that it is a cause is therefore something accidental to it. To this extent, it can be said that the causality of substances is only the product of representation. But precisely this causality as product of representation is what mechanism is. For mechanism is this, that causality as identical determinateness of a diversity of substances, and hence as the foundering into this identity of their self-subsistence, is mere positiveness. The objects are indifferent to this unity and maintain themselves in the face of it. But this also, their indifferent self-subsistence, is a mere positiveness. And for this reason they are capable of mixing and aggregating, and as an aggregate of becoming one object. Through this indifference both to their transition and to their self-subsistence, the substances are objects. A. The formal mechanical process. The mechanical process is the positing of that which is contained in the concept of mechanism. Hence the positing in the first place of a contradiction. 1. It follows from the just indicated concept that the interaction of objects is the positing of their identical connection. This positing consists simply in giving to the determinateness which is generated the form of universality, and this is communication, which occurs without transition into the opposite. Spiritual communication, which however takes place in an element of universality in the form of universality, is an idealized connection for itself, one in which a determinateness continues undisturbed from one person to another, generalizing itself unaltered, like a scent freely spreading in the unresisting atmosphere, but also in the communication between material objects does their determinateness widen, so to speak, in an equally idealizing manner. Personality is an infinitely more intensive hardness than objects possess. The formal totality of an object in general, a totality indifferent to determinateness and hence not a self-determination, renders the object indistinct from another object and thus makes interaction at first an unimpeded continuing of the determinateness of the one into the other. Now, in the region of the spirit, there is an infinitely manifold content capable of communication. For by being taken up into intelligence, the content receives this form of universality in which it becomes communicable. But that which is a universal not only by virtue of form, but in and for itself, is the objective as such, both in the region of the spirit and of the body, and as against it the singularity of external objects, as of persons, also is an unessential factor unable to offer any resistance to it. Laws, morals, rational conceptions in general are in the region of the spirit communicable entities of this kind. They pervade individuals, unconsciously imposing themselves on them. In the region of the body, such entities are motion, heat, magnetism, electricity, and the like, all of which, even when one wants to imagine them as stuffs or materials, must be termed as imponderable agents, for they lack that aspect of materiality that grants its singularization. 2. Now, although in the interaction of objects their identical universality is posited first, it is equally necessary to posit the other moment of the concept, that of particularity. The objects thus also demonstrate their self-subsistence, they hold themselves outside each other, and in that universality they produce singularity. This production is reaction in general. To begin with, this reaction is not to be conceived of as a mere sublation of action and of the communicated determinateness. What is communicated is as a universal positively present in the particular objects and particularizes itself only in their diversity. To this extent, therefore, what is communicated remains what it is, only distributed among the objects or determined by their particularity. The cause gets lost in its other, in the effect, the activity of the causal substance in its action. But the active object only becomes a universal, its action is from the start not a loss of its determinateness, but a particularization by virtue of which the object, which was at first that whole determinateness present in it as single, now becomes a species of it, and the determinateness is thereby posited for the first time as a universal. The two, the raising in communication of the singular determinateness into universality, and the particularization of it in distribution, the reduction of what was only a one to a species, are one and the same. Now, reaction is equal to action. First, this is manifested by the other object taking over the entire universal, and so it is now active against the first. Thus, its reaction is the same as the action, a reciprocal repulsion of the impulse. Second, what is communicated is the objective. It therefore remains the substantial determination of the object on the presupposition of their diversity. The universal thus at the same time specifies itself in them. And consequently, each object does not simply give back the whole action but possesses its specific share. But third, reaction is a wholly negative action insofar as each object, because of the elasticity of its self-subsistence, repels within it the positiveness of an other and retains its self-reference. The specific particularity of the determinateness communicated in the objects, what was before called species, returns to singularity, and the object asserts its externality as against the communicated universality. The action thereby passes over into rest. It proves to be only a superficial, transient alteration within the self-enclosed indifferent totality of the object. 3. This return constitutes the product of the mechanical process. Immediately, the object is presupposed as a singular, then as a particular, as against another particular, but finally as indifferent towards its particularity as universal. The product is the totality of the concept previously presupposed but now posited. It is a conclusion in which the communicated universal is united with singularity through the particularity of the object. In rest, however, the mediation is posited at the same time as sublated. Or again, what is posited is that the product is indifferent to this determining of it, and that the received determinateness is external in it. Accordingly, the product is the same as the object that first enters the process, but at the same time that object is first determined through this movement. The mechanical object is, as such, an object only as product. For what it is only by virtue of the mediation of an other in it. It is as product that it thus is what it was supposed to be in and for itself, a composite, a mixture, a certain arrangement of parts in general such that its determinateness is not self-determination but something posited. Yet the result of the mechanical process is not already there ahead of that process itself. Its end is not in its beginning, as in the case of purpose. The product is in the object a determinateness which is externally posited in it. Hence this product is indeed, according to its concept, the same as what the object already is at the beginning. But at the beginning, the external determinateness is not yet there as posited. The result is therefore something quite other than the first existence of the object, and is something utterly accidental for it. B. The real mechanical process. The mechanical process passes over into rest. That is to say, the determinateness that the object obtains through that process is only an external one, just as external to it is this rest, for although the latter is a determinateness opposed to the activity of the object, the two are each indifferent to the object. Rest can also be viewed, therefore, as brought about by an external cause, just as much as it was indifferent to the object to be active. Now further, since the determinateness is a posited one and the concept of the object has gone back to itself through the process of mediation, the object contains the determinateness as one that is reflected into itself. Hence, in the mechanical process, the objects and the process itself now have a more closely determined relation. They are not merely diverse, but are determinately differentiated as against one another. Consequently, the result of the formal process, on the one hand a determinationless rest, is, on the other hand, through the imminently reflected determinateness, the distribution among several objects mechanically relating to one another of the opposition which is in the object as such. The object that on the one hand lacks all determination, showing no elasticity and no self-subsistence in its relations, has on the other hand a self-subsistent impenetrable to other objects. Objects now have, also as against one another, this more determined opposition of the self-subsistent singularity and the non-self-subsistent universality. The precise difference between any two may be had merely quantitatively as a difference in a body of diverse magnitudes of mass or of intensity or in various other ways. But in general, the difference cannot be fixed at just this abstract level, also as objects, both are positively self-subsistent. Now the first moment of this real process is, as before, communication. The weaker can be seized and invaded by the stronger only insofar as it accepts the stronger and constitutes one sphere with it. Just as in the material realm, the weaker is secured against the disproportionately strong, as a sheet hanging freely in the air is not penetrated by a musket ball, a weak organic receptivity is not as vulnerable to strong stimuli as it is to weak. So is the holy feeble spirit safer facing the strong than one who stands closer to the strong. Imagine, if you will, someone dull-witted and ignoble. Lofty intelligence will make no impression on such a one, nor will nobility. The one single effective defense against reason is not to get involved with it at all. To the extent that an object that has no standing of its own is unable to make contact with one which is self-subsistent, and no communication can take place between them, the latter is also unable to offer resistance, that is, cannot specify the communicated universal for itself. If they were not in the same sphere, their mutual connection would be an infinite judgment and no process would be possible between them. Resistance is the precise moment of the overpowering of the one object by the other, for it is the initial moment in the distribution of the communicated universal and in the positing of the self-referring negativity, of the singularity to be established. Resistance is overpowered when its determinateness is not commensurate to the communicated universal which the object has accepted and which is supposed to be singularized in the latter. The object's relative lack of self-subsistence is manifested in the fact that its singularity lacks the capacity for what is communicated to it and is therefore shattered by it, for it is unable to constitute itself as subject in this universal, cannot make the latter its predicate. Violence against an object is for the latter something alien, only according to this second aspect. Power becomes violence when power, an objective universality, is identical with the nature of the object, yet its determinateness or negativity is not the object's own imminent negative reflection according to which the object is a singular. Insofar as the negativity of the object is not reflected back into itself in the power, and the latter is not the object's own self-reference, the negativity as against the power is only abstract negativity whose manifestation is extinction. Power, as objective universality and as violence against the object, is what is called fate. A concept that falls within mechanism insofar as fate is called blind, that is, its objective universality is not recognized by the subject in its own specific sphere. To add a few more remarks on the subject, the fate of a living thing is in general the genus, for the genus manifests itself through the fleetingness of the living individuals that do not possess it as genus in their actual singularity. Merely inanimate natures, as mere objects, like other things at lower levels on the scale of being, do not have fate. What befalls them is a contingency. However, in their concept as objects, they are self-external. Hence, the alien power of fate is simply and solely their own immediate nature, externality and contingency itself. Only self-consciousness has fate in a strict sense, because it is free, and therefore in the singularity of its I, it absolutely exists in and for itself and can oppose itself to its objective universality and alienate itself from it. By this separation, however, it excites against itself the mechanical relation of a fate. Hence, for the latter to have violent power over it, it must have given itself some determinateness or other over against the essential universality. It must have committed a deed. Self-consciousness has thereby made itself into a particular, and this existence, like abstract universality, is at the same time the site open to the communication of its alienated essence. It is from this site that it is drawn into the process. A people without deeds is without blame. It is wrapped up in objective, ethical universality, is dissolved into it, is without the individuality that moves the unmoved, that gives itself a determinateness on the outside and an abstract universality separated from the objective universality. Yet in this individuality, the subject is also divested of its essence, becomes an object, and enters into the relation of externality towards its nature, into that of mechanism. C. The products of the mechanical process. The product of formal mechanism is the object in general, an indifferent totality in which determinateness is as posited. The object has hereby entered the process as a determinate thing, and in the extinction of this process, the result is, on the one hand, rest, the original formalism of the object, the negativity of its determinateness for itself. But on the other hand, it is the sublation of the determinateness, the positive reflection of it into itself, the determinateness that has withdrawn into itself, or the positive totality of the concept, the true singularity of the object. The object, determined at first in its indeterminate universality, then as particular, is now determined as an objective singular, so that in it that reflective semblance of singularity, which is only a self-subsistence opposing itself to the substantial universality, is sublated. This resulting immanent reflection, the objective oneness of the objects, is now a oneness which is an individual self-subsistence, the center. Secondly, the reflection of negativity is the universality which is not a fate standing over against determinateness, but a rational fate, immanently determined, a universality that particularizes itself from within. The difference that remains at rest and fixed in the unstable particularity of the objects and their process, it is the law. This result is the truth and consequently also the foundation of the mechanical process.